Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 110.
This week on the podcast, after starting an illegal war, Republicans are suddenly reconcerned about the rule of law after Obama's renegade prisoner exchange.
Resignation fever sweeps the Obama administration.
Republicans are still in denial about the lack of jobs that will be available after the world ends due to climate change.
And this week on Hillary Pillory, Clinton makes some hard choices concerning whether or not she wrote her own book.
Snowden refuses to heed Kerry's call to man up, continues to make the even manlier choice by living in the terrifying country of Russia.
And the American Family Association lives in fear of their gay sympathizing friends and hatches a plan to combat them using the Postal Service.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Do it.
Do that. Find us on Facebook and Twitter and all those places.
All the places.
All the places.
Instagram. We're not Instagramming, but we're there.
But we're there. You could find our previous Instagrams, which were fascinating and informative, as you might expect.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we're sorry to report that Maya Angelou died this week.
Yeah, RIP.
You probably know.
You had to.
Because if you were alive and had social media anywhere nearby, you saw just a flurry of Maya Angelou quotes.
Right. It was
some of which were not correct.
It was a Maya Angelou quote. Fandango this week.
She got also, I seem to notice on Twitter at least, she was getting credit for a lot of quotes that were not Maya Angelou quotes.
Well, I mean.
So?
That's okay.
It's respect, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And there were actually some interesting articles about this sort of like brushing over of her past as a prostitute, because it was something she was very open about.
Yeah.
But all of the obituaries made like very scant mention.
Yeah.
But as obviously, if a literary treasure can't also have a past.
There was also one of, I can't remember who it was. It was either like the National Review online or somebody like that. Like, because she, one of the other things that she had like talked about, like, you know, was she was a gun owner.
Oh,
and so
I did not see that.
So they had like done some headline where it was like, you know, R.I.P. Maya Angelou, proud gun owner, and like,
oh
gun
god, rights,
and sort of like, okay, right. I mean, sure, but right. I like also
like not
that's. That's not what she's known for.
No.
That's not who Maya Angelou is.
Well, and that doesn't address sort of like the larger implications of what them saying that means.
Of course.
So that's like obnoxious.
Anyway.
Anyway. But were sorry to hear that.
Great.
That was
human
sad
being,
news.
Obviously, yes. For very many reasons. And
writer of many quotes that were her own and were
yes,
good.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. So in any case, we had a sort of interesting thing happened this week that you may not have heard about.
Yeah.
Because this was not getting the kind of headlines
that
I expected it
to.
It's
just because it was very recently. I mean,
right,
it was
yes.
sort of, it was, they were treating it this morning on Meet the Press as breaking news.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I feel like I read an article about it yesterday.
Maybe it was yesterday, but like Chuck Hagel was on
yeah.
and like, so, I mean, it's been sort of like a big deal, but basically what happened is, so we had, he was the last prisoner of war in Afghanistan from
right.
like the Afghanistan war that has been going on for what we talked about last week, like 13 years or something like that.
A million years.
And so his name was Army Sergeant
Bergdahl.
And we finally got him back. He's coming back home because
right.
we made a prisoner exchange with the Afghanistan government for, well, I think it was Qatar.
That was the government that was brokering the deal.
They were brokering the deal,
yeah.
basically. But so we let five.
Like
Taliban
yeah.
Gave them back to the Afghanistan government from Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
So we are getting our last POW back, and we're giving back
for five Guantanamo prisoners
right.
that were
exactly.
ex-Taliban or are Taliban or whatever their current status is. Nobody
yes.
knows. But it was a. It sort of has already started to generate.
It's a huge deal.
Massive.
I think there's going to be this is going to be an ongoing discussion.
Yes.
I think for the weeks and months to come, probably, because it brings up sort of like a lot of issues. Basically,
right.
I mean,
what everyone in Guantanamo is there for? Because like, are they just there so that we can trade them back and forth for
well,
things?
Well, that's
like,
the thing. Because
are we keeping
these five,
them there for a reason?
These
or?
Five people had been sort of like they were, I think, being kept there. They had not been charged with anything,
right.
and they were considered to be five fairly dangerous people who worked for the Taliban, you know, that were captured, that were, you know, pretty high up, and obviously, like, you know, they're not friendly people
right.
to us. And they had been captured, and they'd been there ever since. They hadn't been charged. They were being held indefinitely.
Right.
And as many people in Guantanamo
Most people in Guantanamo are being held indefinitely for
and,
no reason.
You know, it sort of... it's like you said, it's like, are these people only there for us to be sort of like bargaining with people?
Well, because once we're able to release five of them, then like, did we release five dangerous criminals or five guys that were like a part of a bureaucracy of dangerous men?
Right, exactly.
Like, what is the sort of, what was everyone who is in Guantanamo doing that made them so dangerous? And is it something that without organization would have made them dangerous? Because that, I feel like, is an important distinction once we're starting to release random prisoners.
Right. Well, and the government, of course, is saying that obviously it was important to them to sort of like, you know,
get this guy back
and also sort of, you know, Chuck Hagel, sort of, I heard him talking about like how, you know, it's also a sign that, you know, this is coming on the heels of a huge, you know, drawdown announcement of our troops in Afghanistan. So it's sort of like, well, we're not at war with them any longer. So we can sort of like give these people back if we want. And he also sort of like felt like the giving back of these five people could potentially, you know, lead to talks in the future if we had to sort of like deal with the Taliban.
Right.
But it is sort of, there's also a lot of legality issues that are coming up. And the Republicans, of course, are like real hot and bothered
about
this.
Suddenly really care about what's legal and not legal.
And
didn't care about that when they went to war.
No.
Now very concerned.
No, exactly. Because apparently when we give over prisoners who are sort of considered to be terrorists
dangerous,
the president has to give the Congress a 30-day notice. And he also, on top of that, has to like tell them why, you know, whatever threat that they posed has been mitigated and that they can just now be leaving. And none of that had been done. So they're sort of potentially, like, you know, rightly upset. But like you said, I mean, that's not a thing that they have
probably... It's a convenient time for them to be upset.
Exactly.
I mean, it is upsetting. The White House said that this is sort of... These circumstances were not, like...
Right.
Normal circumstances. They had this opportunity to get this guy back. It was sort of, it had to happen quick.
Right.
Like this.
But if the if the opportunity existed now, is there any particular reason that like it would have totally devolved in the next 30 days? Like I don't get it. And this is sort of like, obviously I don't know like all of the sort of details, you know, high level wise, but it's sort of, it annoys me in the sense that it is things like this that Obama does sometimes that I feel like just does give fuel to this sort of like fire that he sort of like is disobeying
the
law. And I don't necessarily like a lot of the things that like the Republicans bring up as him, you know, having done something like this.
Things that they were blocking him from doing something the normal way.
I think are just totally like ridiculously fake things.
Immigration is a good example of that.
But I feel like he sort of, you know, like this is just sort of like, couldn't we have done this right?
I wonder two things. One is whether he thought that they would be able to get Congress's approval to negotiate this release at all.
Potentially.
Because obviously these people don't care about actual veterans in the sort of physical and tangible sense. They care about sort of like their own, you know, their own, you know, extravagant things that they say about veterans.
They may not have approved of this deal just due to the fact of who these five people
exactly.
are.
Exactly. So I think that maybe they thought, and I wonder if there was sort of like a window where they were in talks that were seeming to work. Because with diplomacy, I feel like you can't rely... You can't always be like...
Right, you can't just make a decision and then wait for a month. Sure.
We'll figure this out. We'll have these wackos saying crazy things to the press the whole time. They'll definitely badmouth you. And you'll definitely look like fools at the end. And we'll look like fools at the end. And everyone will be powerless.
Yeah.
So I wonder if this is... I mean, because I think to some degree, a lot of the times when he does stuff like this, it's not that I'm like... Like, I'm happy to see a president... do, you know, sort of act above the law. But I do feel like he's been under an extraordinary amount of pressure and an extraordinary, like, there's been an extraordinary amount of pushback for things that he's tried to do that are seemingly reasonable things. It is reasonable to want to get our last prisoner of war back from Afghanistan.
Yes, and it's
not, like, his fault that the prisoner of war got, you know, taken in the first place. He wasn't the one that led us into that war.
Right.
So, it's sort of, like, nice, it's nice of them to say this now, but I feel like they probably would have been a roadblock to it actually happening, and that's probably
and
why he did it that way.
It's the type of situation where it's on some level sort of like, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because, like, had it come out later that he had not taken the opportunity to get, like, our last POW home, then, like, all the Republicans would have been furious that he was sort of, like, you know, leaving our, you know, last troop, you know, our last POW sort of, like, in harm's way. And, like, you know, so...
I wonder if part of it is that... I mean, and I think this would be an appropriate thing to think, is that he probably thinks that we shouldn't have all these fucking people in Guantanamo just sitting there. So he's probably like, fuck it. Take five of them. Figure this shit out, you know? Like, I wonder if part of it has to do with the issue of us having had their own these prisoners of wars ourselves
right.
for so long, because we have more than one prisoner of war from that war currently residing at Guantanamo. Like,
sure.
We have a shit ton of prisoners of war. So, like, who yes. are we to talk about, who, you know, negotiating for prisoners of war? Like, I wonder if part of it is just sort of like an effort to get this chapter closed without having to deal with the sort of acrimony that will go along with getting Congress involved. That's crazy to have that problem, P.S. It is yes. not. I'm not a fan of him having that problem or of the fact that anyone in the White House thought that this was something that they should have to do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I sort of wonder if they're just sort of like, well, it's like sometimes he's had to act above the law because the law has not been protecting him the way it protects all American right. citizens. Like, yeah.
No,
you know,
it's true.
I mean,
it's
that's, true. That's, I think, sort of the sad reality of this situation, which yeah. is sort of like a screwy one to begin with.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, speaking of wars and veterans, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah, veterans. Yeah.
We talked last week about that whole VA scandal that has been just in the news nonstop
yeah.
For a million years, it felt like.
Ongoing.
Ongoing scandal yeah. But this week, Eric Shinseki, who was the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, resigned.
He resigned.
There was a lot of pressure on him to resign. We talked about that last week a bit. There yeah. were some other resignations that were sort of like the fallout, you know, that had to, yeah. there were scapegoating going on. Yeah. So there were some resignations before that that were just like random people in the VA that resigned.
Yeah.
But this week, Shinseki finally resigned.
Yeah. Well, and he's obviously not the problem, and I think
no,
everybody
exactly.
knows...
No, exactly. It was just, like, a dumb thing.
I think that everybody knows that, but, like, on some level, like, when you get into a situation like this, like...
You have to resign.
He sort of had to resign.
That's what
like,
you
I
do.
Mean, bless his heart.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, it's
it
like...
It certainly
he
was not...
He couldn't
well,
stay
Well, he was probably like, get me the fuck out of here.
Probably so.
Like...
I mean, like, I think that everyone, you know, on the left and right can sort of, like, really agree that this is sort of, like, a systemic problem that
yeah.
doesn't have necessarily anything to do with Shinseki. It does sort of, like, it is a little... bizarre that, you know, he sort of, like, claimed to not know that this was going on, because,
right.
like, I feel like when the, I mean, I, like, right now, they're, you know, sort of, like, auditing the VA right now, sort of, like, to see how bad this is, and it seems like it's fairly bad,
yeah.
just, like, in terms of the, you know, there was sort of, yeah. like, the specific problem that we talked about in Phoenix.
Saying you didn't know about it is what you say when faced with an obvious problem that's been plaguing your organization for years, but you can't do anything about
it. Right, exactly.
Because he was sort of ultimately
yeah.
powerless to figure
yeah.
out what to do, because there was no money to treat all of these
no.
people.
Well,
so,
and that's
like,
what I think, you know, this week we saw a lot of that. You and I talked about this
yeah.
last week, but, like, throughout the week, a lot of people have been, like, talking about, like, well, Republicans have been
blocking
veterans
from
bills
this for, yeah.
for, you know, for years, basically. And we sort of finally got some of that out into the world this week,
yeah.
which is good because, you know, I think that we will probably start to fund it. Like,
I,
on some level.
I
like,
would
I think,
hope so.
I think the Republicans are not going to be able to, we should get this funding bill back out
yeah.
now. Like,
unless,
let's vote on that now.
Unless
and see
John
what happens.
McCain's plan comes into effect,
God.
Because John McCain wants Tom Coburn, who's retiring this year,
yeah.
to become the new head of the VA. And Tom Coburn is just a walking cut machine.
Yes,
so he would probably figure out a way to get the spending under control
I think John
by
McCain
stopping
called him
offering services.
John McCain called him a reformer, which is always coded language for
I've
money
reminded
slasher.
The listeners of this podcast many times that Tom Coburn somehow single-handedly stripped 5 years out of the 9/11 health bill.
Yeah, he did.
Single-handedly.
He's from Oklahoma,
He's
people,
from Oklahoma,
by the way.
A state that we've... suggested is not a state that should be allowed to elect people to public
right.
office.
Or decide what sort of health care people in New York are getting.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that we've had to bring up about the questionable antics going on in Oklahoma, a state
right.
that takes more federal funding than they receive by a significant margin.
Right.
And receives
or give
most
it, or,
of our,
right. Or than they...
Than they give.
Than they,
and
right, yeah.
receives a lot of federal disaster relief funding
yes.
for... reasons that have to do with them living in a shithole, apparently.
Tornado.
There's, like, Tornado Alley.
Yeah,
there's
alley.
Dust storms. There's
yeah, it's a disaster
flooding.
There.
Like, everything that goes on there
just
is
don't
terrible.
Don't be living there.
This is a terrible place to live.
Yeah.
But in any case, McCain's plan to have Tom Coburn run the VA...
Just, that's a non-starter. Although, in this... the article that I was reading about McCain's floating that said... did bring up the fact that Obama and Tom Coburn are, like, real chummy. As
Ew.
Far as like they're apparently
Tom
like
Tom Coburn
they
is
came
the most
into,
asshole-ish asshole.
They came
in
into
world.
The Senate at the same time, and apparently their wives became like real like buddy buddy like when they met. I know. And then they I guess that like when he announced his retirement, Obama, like, released a statement, like, talking about, like, how great of a guy he was. And, like, you don't usually do that, like, when a member, like, you don't release sort of, like, a flowery statement when just sort of, like, a lawmaker of the other party is resigning.
Just spent a while defending Obama for releasing these political prisoners without consulting Congress.
You're taking it back?
I'm taking it back.
Yeah, do it.
Fuck that.
Do whatever you want.
Tom Coburn's an asshole. Tom Coburn is one of those guys who's walking around somehow single-handedly commanding the entire Senate because he has this sort of, like, flip, you know, this sort of, like, important vote.
Yeah.
This, you know.
Screw him.
Swingish. It's not a swing vote because he only votes for asshole-ish nonsense, right. But, like.
Who needs him?
Nope. Nobody needs him.
Nobody Get needs him. He's
I was
leaving.
Thrilled to hear he was leaving.
I was going
to
say, we don't have him run the VA.
No.
That's not a thing.
First of all, you're a Democratic president. Appoint a Democrat to run the VA.
Yeah.
Like, don't waste that opportunity.
Yeah.
We can have anyone, any idiot can appoint Tom Coburn to run the VA.
Right. Don't be that idiot.
Like, yeah. In any case, in other news of appointments and
on the same day.
On the same day that all of this happens, Shinseki resigns and chaos reigns. Jay Carney also resigned.
Right?
Maybe he was just like, fuck this shit. I'm over it.
Right? Apparently he had, like, said, he had told the president, like, in April, like, but
it's weird that they just announced this, like, as if it were, like, happening.
Right, like, you know, like, Obama sort of, like, came into a press conference and was like, oh, by the way.
A press conference about Shinseki's resignation.
I know. It was the same day. It was, like, later that afternoon, basically. So, anyway, he's gone. Principal Deputy Press Secretary Josh Earnest, who's only 39.
I know.
Is going to take his place for, like, a while. He's, like, I don't think he's going to be permanent. Unless maybe they make him so. Maybe he'll do a real bang-up
job. His last name is Earnest, which is, I think, a good sign.
Uh-huh.
Or a bad sign.
Who knows?
It's a press secretary. It's probably a bad sign.
Carney's not going to do anything else.
No, just sick of it. Just over
it. He's excited about the possibilities.
That's what you say when you're over it.
Right.
When you're just really fucking over it.
Because he's not that old.
No.
I mean, he used to work for Time, I think. I think he was, like, either, like, a writer or an editor at Time or something. Yeah. And then, like, worked for Biden or something like that for a while. Or I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure he'll do something that's
pressy. Lobby something.
Lobby. Yeah, probably.
That's what I would do if I were in that situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, you got to make a living.
Yeah.
But so in any case, that chaos has happened.
Yeah. So that was just sort of that was a weird day.
It was a weird day. Yes.
Yeah.
There were some other announcements that were made by the Obama administration that were less weird and more awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And this is actually, I think, technically coming tomorrow, but, like, we've been talking about it for, like, a couple days. There have been some news stories about it. And supposedly, Wall Street Journal sort of, like, released something today that they sort of, like, have it on, you know, good accord that this is going to happen, basically. But, like, the EPA is going to release their proposed standards tomorrow for power plants, and they're going to call for a 30% cut in emissions by 2030. And this is, like, a big deal.
This is the first time they've done this for existing power plants.
Yes, exactly.
So before, they were like, if you build a new power plant, you know, it has to meet these emission standards. If you have an old one, just do whatever the hell you want.
Right. And this is
emit up a storm.
Yeah, exactly. And this is sort of like, I mean, it's a big deal. Like, a lot of people are sort of like talking about, like, this could potentially be sort of like a legacy maker.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, this is a big change in policy because it sort of puts pressure on the existing energy industry to, you know, to also sort of shoulder some of the burden of having to deal with the fact that climate is changing.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's gotten more dangerous because we're having terrible weather events all the time. So,
and this also sort of, like, in terms of, you know, the worst polluters, you know, when it comes to carbon emissions are coal. And so this is also sort of like, you know, I think everybody has been sort of like just tiptoeing around doing this because of all
coal
of the
runs,
like, coal.
I was about to say coal runs Hollywood. That's not right.
It doesn't. No.
Coal runs Washington.
It does. Well, yeah, it totally does. And it runs, I mean, it runs a lot of the country, really.
Yeah.
And so,
right,
like, to put these sort of, you know, standards on coal plants is a huge deal because, like, that's where most of the country gets its electricity from.
Yeah. And
they're the biggest polluters.
It's a very powerful industry here.
Right. It definitely is. Yeah.
And especially, I mean, a lot of significant districts are run by coal,
is another thing. Yeah, and states, exactly. Yeah. So it'll be, and they are already, you know, gearing up for this fight, basically.
Yeah.
Like, because
they're not going to take this lying down.
No, they are
they
not.
They would not.
They are not at all. Because they are sort of, like, already, you know, a lot of these coal, you know, big producing coal states like, you know, Kentucky and West Virginia and Kansas, Missouri also, they are already sort of, like, out in front of this because they they're not having this.
No.
And they have, they're obviously, they're, you know, spouting the sort of like, oh, it's going to kill jobs, it's going to raise energy
and
prices.
They've been
and
in crisis mode for years because it's been obvious that something like this is going to have to come at some point. They're a major polluter.
Well, right.
That whole industry is a major polluter, and no one has had any incentive up until this point to figure out how to make it pollute less. Like, understandably, coal is already sort of a environmentally questionable thing to be burning in the first place, but mining coal is a very destructive process.
Right.
Like, everything that goes into making and manufacturing coal.
Yeah. Well, they've been trying to get out in front of this for years by talking about clean coal.
Right.
As if you can
which
just put the word clean in front of the word coal, and then you have clean coal.
It's like having clean, dirty laundry.
That's not what you do.
If
you
your laundry is dirty, it's not clean, so
no,
you can't have that.
Just
if
by calling it clean, dirty laundry, you haven't then
you haven't
made
it clean.
That's not what happens.
Right.
So, you know, this is... It's a big deal, and I think that we're going to see a big. This is gonna be a fight because
well, this is a great lame duck issue for him to get into.
Well, I think so too. And the other thing about this is just sort of like I think that we all can sort of like I mean you know Democrats have been sort of agreeing on this for a long time, but I think that as we get sort of like more into this you know climate change debate, I think more and more people are sort of like starting to realize that yes, it is actually a thing. Even you see some Republicans talking that way now. Not enough of them, certainly.
No.
But
it's
becoming too much to ignore. And I think that the next thing that is going to be too much to ignore is the fact that we can't fix it cheaply.
Right.
So like, you know, I'm sorry, and if this sounds insensitive, then so be it. But like, if some people have to lose some jobs and some people have to pay some more money to get their energy, then like, who fucking cares? Because we have to save Earth.
We have to do it.
Like,
well, and the other thing is, I think, you know, if this is done in a smart way, there will be opportunities created by sort of greener energy, you know, development.
Well, and that's what...
It could take the place of a lot of these coal jobs. Like, understandably, a lot of coal jobs are not the type of, like, scientifically skilled jobs that, you know, coal mining required, but they're a lot less dangerous.
Right.
Because coal mining is really fucking dangerous. And they're a lot less destructive, and it's... There is room, because we do need to solve this problem not just by having coal, you know, pollute less, but by also coming up with ways to not need coal so much.
Right.
There will be room.
Right. There's
jobs there. So if the administration can figure out a way to sort of like shift that investment so that people don't lose jobs in the sense that an industry disappears and a whole bunch of people in one part of the country end up out of work, if the entire state of West Virginia loses their jobs, can you imagine how shitty it's going to get over there?
Right.
It's already pretty terrible.
Yes.
So like...
Yeah.
But they're, you know,
well, and this
hopefully
is the thing that,
someone can come up with a way to kind of shift these jobs into some other sector.
Well, and people have been talking about that for years. And, you know, there's been a lot of, well, Van Jones has been talking about this for a while, who was in the Obama administration early on and sort of wasn't really super pleased with how it was looking. But I mean, you know, he sort of has talked a lot about this because, you know, what was that book? Like, I think The Green Collar Economy, I think was his book, basically. But like, it's like you said, there are definitely ways to like ensure that just because maybe we stop, you know, burning coal doesn't mean that, like, you know, an entire industry has to, like,
our need
lose
for
a job,
energy
basically.
Isn't going to go away
right,
if
we still
have
need
to
energy.
Lower coal emissions.
Right, exactly.
Our need for coal could go away if we come up with a way that's not horribly dangerous and polluting to create that energy.
Right. But apparently, just to sort of, like, wrap this whole argument up, there is apparently, you know, there are some rules on the books, basically, that, like, if a state wants to set their own standards that are different than the EPA, there's sort of like this loophole where like if they can prove that, you know, there's some sort of like, you know, economic or job sort of like turmoil that like the federal standards are going to create, then they can sort of like set their own. It's not a loophole that has really sort of like been used before. No
well,
states
they've
have
never
really
had to,
so they've never had to
no
because there's never been a federal
standard.
Emissions. Right. But
we're
going to
see that getting
like that's going to happen, and then you're going to and then you're going to have a real sort of like battle between some states and the federal government and their EPA standards.
Yeah.
So look for that in the future. We'll be talking about it. I'm sure it's not going to go away.
No.
Yeah.
Just as our need for energy will not.
Yeah.
Go away. So that is what's happening on the energy front.
Yeah.
So let's get back to Benghazi.
Yes. God. All this boring energy.
This boring
talk,
energy.
When
talk.
We could be talking for hours about
Benghazi. I know. Hillary Clinton has a new book coming out.
Yes.
We're
going to
talk a little bit later about who wrote that book, because it's not her. But she, this week, decided to pre-release the Benghazi chapter.
Yes.
Just to make
to
us
Politico,
talk about,
I think she
to Politico.
Yeah.
Just, I guess, to, I mean, I guess it's sort of like a self-defense mechanism, but it's also sort of like, now we can talk more about Benghazi, because now Hillary Clinton has added more fire to the flames.
It was a smart move on her part, basically, because, like, I think that, like, obviously, having the book come out now is what you do when you're going to be running for president, but it's also a thing that you do when you want to sort of, like, now that we can talk about this whole Benghazi situation here, we don't have to talk about it in, like, mid-2015 when she's, like, full on running for president. Like, you can sort of, like, declare that this has been sort of, like, an issue that has already, you know, been over with.
Right.
I don't think that's going to be the case because the Republicans are obsessed
with
this.
No amount of facts or logic has stopped them in the past from talking about this.
But it also is an interesting thing to do because, like, a lot of people are talking about how she's sort of, like, it's a smart thing to do just in terms of her book tour.
Yeah.
because when you, she's only released one chapter, and it's the Benghazi chapter, and it's sort of like how, now she doesn't have to talk about the Benghazi scandal when she's, you know, going around and speaking at Barnes & Noble.
Right, because everyone on Earth will have already read it and discussed it to death.
She's doing a Fox News interview with Bret Baier, like, we can just sort of, like, she's hoping that she can declare this over with.
Yeah.
It's wishful thinking. But that's the point of releasing the one chapter before you do anything else.
Yeah.
Like, you try and get it out of the way so you can go sell some books.
Well, and it'll probably make everyone think that every chapter will be as salacious as the Benghazi chapter.
It's called Hard Decisions.
Like it's going to be the most super boring book on Earth.
Right. It's going
to
be...
Sorry to whoever wrote it.
It's going to be overwrought.
We have the name of the writer.
Well, yeah, we'll get there
in a little bit.
But anyway, so this chapter came out, and shock of shocks, the
Republicans aren't happy,
furious.
Don't want to hear it
about it. They don't want to hear it. They were all talking about how it was cherry picked and it was illogical, and Ted Cruz called it weak and arrogant. And the Weekly Standard's Stephen F. Hayes wrote that Clinton's assertion that every step of the way, whenever something new was learned, it was quickly shared with Congress and the American people. He said that was just false. It's spectacularly, flamboyantly untrue. There are literally dozens of examples that disprove that claim. There's no chance that Clinton actually believes this. Nobody else does. I mean, people were like, really. This is my favorite one, actually, because the National Review. So do you remember in 2008, when she was running for president, she got caught in that thing where she had to, like, walk back a statement where she said that, like, during the whole Bosnia thing, when Bill was president, she went and there was, like, sniper fire, like, when she got off of the airplane when she went to go visit Bosnia, and, like, that was
Turned
not actually
was
the
not
case.
True.
But there were, like, photos of her just sort of, like, strolling off the plane. Like, there were no snipers at all. So, Jim Garrity from the National Review said, Hillary's assessment of the events in Benghazi that night was undoubtedly shaped by the PTSD she had from escaping snipers in Bosnia, which is sort of, like, my favorite of all of these crazy things. Like, I mean, all of these people are nutso. Anyway, but, like, at least there was some cleverness in that one.
Yeah, no,
that's
a
throwback.
That's
a good throwback.
That's a good throwback.
Yeah.
I would not have thought of it.
No. I wouldn't have either.
Yeah. This is going to be the never-ending issue that never goes away. So what she's instead done, I think, is just start a discussion early on the topic.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you said.
Now we have a full 2 years to talk about Benghazi.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you said, faced with facts, they still have sort of, like, not...
Yeah.
They haven't come around on this issue. So
And this
they're
is,
not
like,
going
the most
to.
Insanely the fake, dumb controversy
totally.
In the world.
And this is the party that sort of, like, is known for... ignoring facts.
Exactly.
About this
No, they're
is,
not afraid of a fact.
This is not the only scandal where fact has sort of, like...
gone out the window.
Totally out the window. So it's not gonna end here. I mean, bless her heart for thinking that it's going to, but that's just... You can do all the Fox News interviews
and,
with Bret Baier in the world.
And free releases of your book that you want.
No...
Hard
makes,
choices.
Makes no difference.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
One hard choice...
That she has to
that
make.
That she has to make is, well, that she previously had to make.
Right,
whether
and
she
failed.
Whether she was actually going to write this book or not.
Right.
Now, it's
she made,
coming out.
She made that choice.
Her name's on it. She did make the choice. That was a hard choice.
Right.
She made it.
Chose not to
she
write it.
She chose not to write it herself.
This is not the first time she's made that hard choice.
Right.
Because she also didn't write It Takes a Village. It Takes a Village was written by Barbara Feinman, who is a professor at Georgetown. She was paid $120,000 for writing the book.
Right.
It took her seven months. But she... The reason we know this is because she went public and complained because she didn't get any credit.
Right.
At all, at any point.
Nothing,
it wasn't
right.
like Hillary Clinton like a, and Barbara Feinman wrote
right.
the book.
Or not even that. Like, at least just, like,
Thanks
throw
Barbara
her a bone
Feinman.
In the acknowledgement section.
Yeah.
Like,
She's
you
not
know
mentioned
I mean?
Anywhere in that book.
No.
So, Edward Ted Widmer, who is the writer of Hard Choices, the book that Hillary Clinton is releasing, and works at the President's Office at Brown University.
Yeah, he's a long-time Hillary.
He's a longtime Hillary person, associate. Fan, yeah. associate, as fan. They called it. Like yeah. Well, as they called it in the Showbiz 411 article that we pulled this from. They called him an associate, so yeah. why not? Yeah. Doesn't know yet whether he's going to have gotten credit. Apparently, that was not worked out ahead of time. Yeah. He's waiting until the book comes out to find out.
He hasn't seen the printed version.
So how could he possibly know? But Clinton got a lot of flack for not giving her ghostwriter on It Takes a Village any sort of credit anywhere. So I'm sort of curious to see.
She's not stupid.
No, I mean.
Entirely.
I was like, I don't know if this is the area in which I'd call her a genius, though. Like,
I don't know.
Like,
just write the book.
Well, I mean, this makes me furious in many ways. One, I mean, It Takes a Village was like a really huge deal, first of all.
It was.
And this book, Hard Choices, won't be because it sounds boring. And It Takes a Village sounded interesting. So that was two differences between this book. That was the difference between this book and that book. But at the same time, like, you know, we know you're releasing a... Like, does she know it's in the book? Like, we know that she's releasing a book because she's trying to run for president. Well, we know what this is all about. But, like, at a certain point, like, what is in this book, Hard Choices?
I know.
How did Ed Widmer know what to write in it? Like, what was her involvement in the book process at all? Like, is there any... Like, does she know what's in the book?
Well, that's what I love.
Because I now am wondering that about it.
I love in this season of Veep, because... Selena has a book out this season.
Right, and like, that she didn't write.
Right, and like in the first episode, she's on a book tour, and then in the second episode, the president changes his stance on abortion. Do you remember this?
Yes, and then she's a look at her when her stance is up in the book.
And like midway through, sort of like when she's trying to figure out what she wants to say about abortion, like one of her aides is sort of like, oh, there's something in your book about this, and they were like, find it, look it up. Like, it's, you know, it's like...
We know this is happening.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I don't necessarily like... I don't hate her for this because it's
this is a thing that everyone's doing.
It's what's happening.
It's infuriating that the book world is being filled with all these nonsense books.
Pay them properly.
Right.
Thank them. And
also,
that's it, I guess. Those are my only two requests.
Should be required to identify them as at least a co-author. That's what I think.
And if everybody did that, I don't think that there would be any shame in it.
No.
Because it's just sort of like, I mean,
like... Everyone's books are being ghostwritten. Lauren Conrad is not writing her own tween novels.
I was going to say, Snooki has written a book.
Yeah, like, she didn't write her book.
What's her name? Paris Hilton's friend from the Simple Life.
Nicole Richie.
I couldn't think of her name.
Oh, yeah, the Jenners.
Yeah.
Kaylee and Kylo.
Yeah, they're not writing books. These people aren't writing books.
In air quotes. Those people don't write in words.
And we don't have to think that they did.
No. But I think that you should be required to identify your ghostwriters because I feel like...
But a lot of people do, which is what's weird. I mean, there are so many books that, like, come out that are just sort of like, you know, such and such with
so-and-so.
Like, there's no shame in that.
I guess you want to put Hillary Clinton's name on it to sell the book. That's fine. But, like, once you're being paid $120,000 for a book that's going to sell millions of copies because it's Hillary Clinton's book...
That's not enough money, first off.
Like, you should get to be an author of that book.
I agree.
You should get identified.
Yeah.
Agreed. And it's crazy that all of these, like, university professors and other people associated with, like, fancy, like, Ivies...
I know,
...are, like,
right?
ghostwriting books for Hillary Clinton. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Such a weird subculture, ghostwriting. I used to know someone who ghostwrote tween novels.
Really?
Yeah. Like, because what happens is, like, there's all of those, like, tween series, like, series.
Mm-hmm.
No, like the Babysitter's Club. The woman who wrote the Babysitter's Club has been dead for years.
Well,
like,
right. Yeah.
She's not writing those books anymore. Is she identified as the author of every single one of them? She absolutely is. Like, the Boxcar Children. There were like 95 of those or something. Like 105. Some ridiculous number. Like, nobody wrote 105 of those books. That's not what happened.
No.
Like, Sweet Valley High.
No.
You know, that's a thing that's happening in the tween book world, because people only write series of books.
And athletes are a lot of times, like, releasing books that, like, have, like, that identify the ghostwriter, and...
Yeah.
I mean, I just, like I don't... Politicians don't have an incentive because they want...
Yeah, they want to think it's their ideas.
Right.
But, like...
We don't care.
There's something very disingenuous about...
I agree.
...that being an accepted practice in politics, and not being a necessity for other people.
I'm going to carry on thinking that the Elizabeth Warren book that I just read was written entirely word for word by her.
You should.
I don't
She definitely
care.
Didn't have time to write that whole book.
Much like the Republicans do, I will ignore facts. Like, if you presented me with the name of the person who wrote that for her, I would just ignore
that. Wouldn't find a place in your mind.
Nope. It's out. It's a fact I'm ignoring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyway.
Why not? Meanwhile, on Wednesday, CBS aired that Edward Snowden interview NBC that they did. I mean, NBC.
Actually, doesn't matter. Neither of us watched it.
No. Oh, no. CBS had an interview with John Kerry that morning where he said that Snowden should man up and come back, face the music.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's nothing more, it's not more manly to come back and face the music after you've like released NSA documents. That's,
I think that he's,
dispense with that.
I don't actually think that he will probably ever come back here because he's not, he's not going to get, he's never going to get clemency from any president.
No, exactly.
I don't think, because he sort of like revealed state secrets. So you're never going to find, you're never going to find a president who sort of like, even if, you know, even if Rand Paul gets elected, sort of like, he's not going to like let him come back here. So he can try, he can try and work out a deal all he wants to, but like the deal is never going to be sort of like a deal that he wants.
Well,
like
he's never
going to, he's never going to get a deal that doesn't involve him coming back here and like spending some time in jail.
Well, he said in the interview, he was like, I would be willing to face some jail time. What he thought was that, you know, the jail time that he's facing is like a minimum of 30 years.
Yeah.
And he was like, I don't want to face the kind of jail time that discourages future whistleblowers from getting, you know, because he still feels very strongly that he did the right thing.
Right.
And so he doesn't want to do the kind of jail time that prevents other whistleblowers from coming forward. And I think that's, it's more the sort of statement. He's giving up his life for this. Like, his life, he's living in Russia, guys.
Yeah.
Russia. So, like, he's given up his life for this.
That's it.
That's, I don't think, what bothers him about this, or at least that's not what seemed to in the interview. In the interview, it seemed more like his concern was that he didn't want to be the death of whistleblowing. He didn't want him to come back, face such harsh fines that no one ever comes
everybody
forward.
Would be
because,
too,
you know, he was saying, like,
afraid to
he was saying, I told people that I was working with in the intelligence community, and colleagues of mine at the NSA, like, that all of this stuff was happening, and they were in disbelief. It wasn't like everyone there was like, well, that's what we do. But they also had said to him, like, stay clear of this.
Yeah.
Like, don't do this. You'll ruin your life, which he did.
But
it was sort of an interesting interview because one of the things that he sort of focused on, or he sort of explained why he felt like this was such a troubling, like why collecting random data becomes troubling, which is not something that anyone at the NSA is dying to do.
No.
So you don't hear sort of like an articulate discussion or argument for why collecting random, because a lot of the time, you know, you're like, oh, they want to hear me and my mom talk about the weather. Fine. Like,
yeah,
I don't care.
Know. Yeah, exactly.
You know, but he was sort of like, it's not just, it's more that they're collecting information from those conversations that can lead them to sort of uninformed conclusions. So like, it's not just that you're having, you know, I think he used the example of like checking hockey scores. He was like, it's not that you're checking hockey scores that, it, you know, that's the problem. It's that they know where you are when you're checking the hockey scores. They can make presumptions about who you're associating with in that location because they know who else is in that location.
Sure.
It's like, it has more to do with the conclusions that they can jump to, which are sort of not, you know, it's more that the conclusions are unjust conclusions.
Sure.
It's
yes.
not, it's not that the sort of information itself
right.
is seems like it would be that damaging.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of the reason why he sort of has, you know, he does himself a, you know, a good service by doing interviews like this, actually,
yes.
because
he's
very articulate and he defends himself very well.
Yeah.
And he sort of like speaks fairly eloquently to about why he feels like he did the right thing. And I think that that is sort of like part of the reason why he's maybe not as hated as, you know, as somebody who didn't do that as well as he does would be.
Of course.
And so,
well, and the other thing that I, the other thing that point that he made repeatedly in this interview that I thought was interesting is that one of the other reasons he won't come back is he said there's no sort of law on the books that would allow you to argue that what you did was in the public interest. So he's being charged with giving away state secrets, and it doesn't make a distinction between giving them to the media and giving them to terrorists or, you know, that sort of thing. There's no part of that, a part of the law that would allow you to argue that what you did was in the public interest and not just like for your own private gain. And
right.
he felt like that was an important distinction because that's the other thing that I think, you know, in his sort of quest to not discredit future whistleblowers,
right.
He sort of feels like he wants there to be some sort of distinction to be made. So even if you end up doing jail time because it is against the law to do these things, you know, he sort of made, I think, a very convincing case for the fact that whether or not you think what he did was the right thing, he was intending to do it in the public interest.
Right.
And that is different going and selling secrets to terrorists.
And it ended up being in the public
interest. Well, and that's
because,
the other thing he said.
We're still getting reforms.
He said in the interview,
gonna,
he was like, I'm still working for the government because the government is making changes
right,
that I
caused.
They're
trying to fix it.
They're
yeah,
trying
exactly.
to fix it.
Right.
I'm the one that caused this.
Yeah.
I'm working for the government. So, and he referred to himself as a patriot, you know, through and through. And like I said, I've always had trouble with him because he has vaguely libertarian
sure.
aims in all this. I'm certainly not someone that feels like I would necessarily have sold or have given out, you know, data on the NSA to the media.
Right.
Out of the blue. And that, you know, that troubles me just because I sort of like feel like we can't trust everyone's judgment.
Well, that's
we can't all just go around telling everyone what everyone's up to.
And that's always the struggle with, I guess, a whistleblower sort of, because like, you know, who is Edward Snowden to sort of
decide
what
public
state secrets can go out to sort of, you know, the entire world. I mean, and I think that it's certainly a dangerous precedent. And I think that you sort of like, and that's the reason why he would have to do jail time if he came back here. And on, you know, I personally think that he should have to. But I also think that
I think there should be a legal distinction, something that was nefarious to the extent that nefarious to the extent that it really is selling information to our enemies.
But
the press is not our enemies.
Right.
And this was ultimately in the interest of the public to know.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. And I think also that, you know, and this is why I think so many people struggle with, you know, when you look at polls sort of that, you know, have to do with whether you agree with what he did or disagree. It's sort of like, it's such a gray area because so many people don't really think that he sort of like acted in a way that, you know, they would have or that you even should. But also the discussion that we're having because of what he did
is an important one
and one that everybody sort of wants to be having. So it's like, you can't it's hard to have it both ways.
It's one that people were trying to have before this release and couldn't because there was no evidence. That's the other thing. It's like, we've been paranoid for years about cell phone companies collecting data and that sort of thing. That's been discussed for years.
Yeah.
And no one knew if it was happening or not.
Right.
And so every time that we got some information that it was happening, it became sort of like more and more disturbing. And this was sort of like the moment where everyone was like, holy shit.
Wait a minute. Yeah, like, exactly.
And, you know, when they sort of, when the answer to that is like, well, we're just collecting random data, it's not connected to your identity or whatever, like, it is sort of alarming to think, though, that anything could be put together from that. That's not necessarily true, because once you're collecting only random data and you're not collecting specific data about what people are doing, you can decide any number of things about what they're up to.
Right, exactly.
But I think that there, like, I mean, I think there needs to be a legal distinction, just not because I even think, you know, if I were him, I wouldn't come back here. Like, I don't necessarily think that we shouldn't give him a ton of jail time or that sort of thing. But I feel like in terms of how this is viewed legally, there is a distinction between doing this because you thought it was in the public interest, even if that wasn't sort of like ultimately the case, and doing this and sort of giving this information or selling this information to terrorists.
Right.
How you make that distinction is, I guess, up to courts. I don't know. Lawyers are up to this. Need business. Like, what?
Right.
Like, they would be against. We don't know what they're. Wait, how you decide what's what.
No. Somebody should.
Somebody should. But going along those lines, if you thought that the NSA was just collecting random cell phone data about your talks about the weather with your mom.
They're not.
They're not. They're also collecting images of your face.
All those selfies that you're taking right now.
They can
NSA
also.
NSA database.
NSA. And what's sort of alarming in a very, like, kind of 1984 scary town way about this is they have your photo because they gave you a passport. So, like, the State Department has this huge database of photos, and they can use that database to, decide where you've been on social media and elsewhere.
But the NSA, apparently, and we found this out through the Snowden leaks, but we're sort of like, I mean, there's so much stuff to go through that, like, we're just sort
we're
of like,
we're going to be getting revelations like, from this forever.
So, but this is, apparently, they intercept, like, millions of images per day, and, like, 55,000 facial recognition quality images, and then they, like, keep them all, and it's apparently sort of like, it's the biggest collection of, like, you know, photos in the world, basically.
I often
wonder,
because
has.
As an American, when you go to Brazil, they make you take a photo and fingerprint just to sort of piss you off because we do that to them.
Sure.
Only American citizens have to do this in Brazil. It's like, there's like certain countries that have sort of decided to give like a big F you at customs to American citizens control because we're giving a big F you to everyone.
Well, I was going to say. Well, and wasn't Brazil.
Even our own citizens.
Wasn't Brazil one of the countries that we were like, weren't we like spying on the president or the prime minister or something
but
like that?
But this has been going
on
for years.
Yeah, of course.
And
but I mean,
one of the things that got released about this, you know, this plan that they, or this thing that they do, is that they didn't really have any way of organizing the photos, and they were not taking them for any purpose, so there's just, like, sort of collections of random photos floating around of every American citizen that's entered Brazil ever.
Right.
It's like, yeah, it's like a random photo, like fingerprints. Like, they have all this personal information about Americans. No one knows what it's going to be used for. No one has it organized. Like, it's just like random images and photos. Right. And
the disorganization of it leads me to believe that it's not going to be used for anything.
No, exactly. But it was like, it's the kind of thing that everyone has often wondered about Brazil because, you know, you go to Brazil, everyone's obsessed with how dangerous it is. And it's obviously not dangerous because American citizens are visiting it. But, like, it's one of the things that you think in a state where the police can't be trusted at all. Because in Brazil, the first thing they tell you is if someone attacks you, don't go to the police.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Because the police are obviously in on it.
Right. Right.
So that's
it's gonna make for an interesting World Cup/Olympics coming up in the next couple of years.
One of the things, well, they've been trying to sort of figure out how to root out corruption in the police force there because of these events.
Yeah.
I think in Brazil's case, these are gonna be a huge boondoggle, but there will be some nice lasting effects.
Boondoggle.
Yeah. But there'll be some nice lasting effects because I think that maybe they'll have to get their police force straightened out at least.
Yeah.
So there'll be some safety involved. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they won't. Who knows? But I feel like this is sort of like what I now am imagining that the U.S. government is up to. Like, they just have this huge database of faces. They figured out who everyone is and where they are at all times, and they don't know what to do about that. They're just, like, hoarding information that shows you and your best friends eating cake on everyone's birthday and, like, hanging out at, like, movie screenings or whatever. Yeah. And, like, doesn't...
That's it.
That's everything. They just have all that sitting around. Big server somewhere.
Uh-huh.
No one knows where it's going or what it's doing. In any case, well, we're making our yearly attempt to enact some gun control laws after a tragic shooting, which is what we like to do. Once a year, we have a tragic shooting, and then we try to pass a gun control law.
It never passes. Right. Maybe this one will?
Well, it's really weak, so it better.
It probably will, but anyway. So some Democratic lawmakers in the House are sort of, on Friday, put out some legislation that it would give some new money to law enforcement who are attempting to prevent gun violence by people who are mentally ill.
Right.
Which seems like something... This is the
what
thing
is that money for? Well, like, exactly. Why can't we provide services to the mentally ill?
Well,
instead of giving the police more money to deal with the mentally ill.
I totally agree. And
that's
like,
crazy.
And what is the... How do the police deal with the mentally ill? Like, what are they... Do they just
nothing.
Like...
They don't do anything. So, you call them. They either calm the mentally ill person down if they're causing trouble, or they're like, sorry, there's nothing we can do.
Right.
And then they leave.
And
I know this because I had that crazy person living next to me having a breakdown and was thinking that people were tunneling into his apartment.
Well, and
the police couldn't do anything. They were just like, sorry.
Right. Well, and in this particular case, we knew that this person was mentally ill.
They were called three times.
The police weren't trying...
They knew he was crazy.
I was going to say, the police weren't trying to prevent gun violence by the mentally ill. They were trying to ignore the mentally ill.
Yeah.
They weren't trying to
do
anything.
What are they supposed to do for him?
Well,
they're policemen.
Well, and that's the...
They walk around keeping the peace. They have a very specific role in society, and it's not psychologist.
Well, that has always been the question about, like, when people say, like, well, you have to keep guns out of the hands of the mentally ill, which is, yes, you do have to... But what do you just
Nobody's
sort of, like...
Nobody's mentally ill until they are.
Right, and then do you just arbitrarily...
And how do you do that?
Like, this person, like, okay, so we knew he was mentally ill. The police were called because he was mentally ill. They showed up. Do they... What do they do?
Search him for guns?
Do they
search his apartment?
Throw him? Do they lock him away somewhere? Because like he's been sort of like somebody called them and told them that he was crazy. Like I mean, it's just sort of it doesn't make any sense.
Once you get called because a mentally ill person has called you because they thought their roommate stole three candles, that's a crazy person.
Yeah, it's
sure,
crazy.
That's a crazy thing to do. I get it.
Yeah.
But like, what are they supposed to do about that?
Yeah.
He was seeing doctors. It's not like he wasn't under treatment. It's just sort of like. You can't know someone's the kind of crazy where they shoot up a school until you know.
Right.
Then
that's
once you know, it's too late.
Yep.
So that's why...
He's dead people at that point.
Yeah. That's why you keep it out of... And this is a guy who... And this is like...
This is why the
this
answer
is... a guy
is...
who bashed in the heads of three people before he went on a shooting spree.
Yes,
he was a dangerous guy.
Yeah.
But he had not done anything up until that point that was all that dangerous.
Right.
The police were not in any way alerted that he was this kind of dangerous until he was.
Right. This is why the answer is not keeping guns out of the hands of
crazy
criminals or the mentally ill.
It's keeping them out of the hands of everybody. That's the answer.
Boom.
Then mentally ill people don't get their hands on guns.
Right, because
nobody has them.
Right, mentally stable people don't have them either.
Exactly. And mentally stable people are just mentally stable until they're mentally ill. This is something we talked about when we were talking about gun control before. We talked about this all the time. You're not crazy till you're crazy.
Right.
You're not the kind of crazy where you shoot up a school you've done it.
Right. No one's a mass murderer until
they
are
committed
then
a mass murderer.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you can't know who the person is who's...
Nope.
Because these are all just
it
like...
It could be you tomorrow, but you don't have a gun.
No, exactly.
So you're going to be safe.
It's not going to be me.
Right. It won't be you.
That's what I always say We had a friend at one point who was considering purchasing a handgun to because she lived alone and to protect herself from intruders. Yeah. And I was like, if an intruder comes in and he has a gun and you point a gun at him, he's more likely to shoot you. If an intruder comes in and he doesn't have a gun and you point a gun at him, then there's a gun in the room.
Right.
And up until that point, it could have been that there was no gun in the room.
Right. Well,
and once there's no gun in the room, no one gets shot.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and we've talked so much about, like, I mean, all of the stats say that, like, if you were the only, like, if you...
You're the only one with a gun, you're more likely to get shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, once you bring a gun to the table, then there's a gun.
Someone's getting shot at that
point. Someone could get shot.
It could be you.
Right. Once, if there's no gun in the room...
Nope. Like,
Brent and I are currently sitting in a room where there's no guns.
We aren't going to shoot
each
other.
We're not going to shoot each other in this room. No.
No.
Until...
We couldn't if we,
right,
if
we couldn't
tried.
We couldn't if we tried.
No.
Yeah. It would be impossible.
Right.
And that's the answer to gun violence, my friends.
That's it.
Boom.
It's so simple.
It's so simple.
I mean...
Well, that's what's so infuriating about this whole issue, though, is that the answer really is so simple. And they've come up with, like, the most watered-down, horrible legislation because they're like, well, we can't pass any actual gun control, so we'll give money to the police to deal with the mentally ill. Like, first of all,
which they
give
don't
money
do.
To mental health services to deal with the mentally ill. That's who are professionals at dealing with the mentally ill. But second of all, like, the answer is so much simpler than that because why not just keep sane people from having guns, too?
Yep.
They're not up to any good.
No.
I said a few months ago, and I thought it was a genius point, that...
Probably was.
It's not like guns make waffles or something, too. Like, they don't have a second purpose that's not dangerous.
No. Uh-uh.
It's not like cars. You're very likely to die in your car. It's very dangerous to drive cars. But at least they get you from point A to point B.
Do you ever watch Good Eats?
No. Obviously not.
So that's one of my favorite shows,
because
I love dorky cooking shows.
Of course.
But Alton Brown will never have any sort of, like, kitchen utensil in the kitchen if it's not a multitasker.
Yeah.
Like, he wants everything in the kitchen to be able to do two things.
Yeah, I think that's
fair. A gun is only killing people.
It only does one thing.
That's it.
It can only kill things.
That's right.
It's only made for killing. You're either threatening to kill someone by shooting it at the air, or you're killing them by shooting them in the body.
Profound words.
Yeah, it's so simple.
Yeah.
In any case, if you wanted further evidence that the world is... falling apart.
Okay. This is just genius because, like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't
this
think...
This is really genius.
It's good. Because, so, there was the, at the Southern Leadership Conference, which
a place you don't want to be.
I mean, so, there's...
It's a celebration of Southern leadership. That's the worst kind of leadership.
I know. Oh, man. That is just... There's there's a lot of red flag words there, and there's only three words.
Exactly.
They're all red flag words. You don't want any of those three words.
No.
So, they had a conference, some people spoke at it, the crazy people spoke at it, and there was a straw poll, and the results are exactly as you would expect them to be at the Southern Leadership Conference, because Ted Cruz came out victorious. However, he eked out a victory over Dr. Ben Carson. it was 30.33% to 29.38%, so it was like less than 1 point, and Ben Carson... is a total wingnut.
Simultaneously, a wingnut and a nobody.
Well, exactly.
Like, he's just like a random guy who's like on Fox News sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't do anything.
He's like going to be this election cycle's Herman Cain.
Yeah.
And saying that, that's not a racist statement because they're both black.
Oh, I didn't even know that Ben Carson was...
But they are both people who are
I do know that they're both crazy.
They are both people who are crazy and also fake people.
Yeah.
You
can't just be a random guy.
Ben Carson, under zero circumstances, will be the president of the United States.
Yeah.
There is not a world that we live in
that
could happen between now and 2016 where Dr. Ben Carson is the president.
No.
It just does. It doesn't.
There's no math.
The sooner Republicans realize that that is the case, the better off they're going to be.
This is a questionable poll.
If they want to nominate them, God bless their souls.
No, go for it.
They should.
Yeah. No, I'd recommend it.
He's going to be president, Republicans.
Right.
If you're listening, he's your best chance at winning the White House.
Absolutely.
That's your ride his coattails into the White House.
No, but he's like a literal nobody. He's just a guy who like sometimes speaks on Fox News, which, P.S., Hillary Clinton is now a woman who sometimes speaks on Fox News. Any idiot can be a person who speaks on Fox News. I've spoken on Fox News.
Yep.
I'm not qualified to be president.
No.
I mean, I'm more qualified than he is to be president, but I'm not qualified to be president just because I've been on Fox News.
Right.
But he's also just like a crazy wingnut.
Right. But they really sort of blew out the next people in line.
Yeah.
Rand Paul was only at 10%, and then Huckabee and Rick Perry were both at 5%. Also,
I was telling
you earlier in the week, Rick Perry is like basically like second home Iowa.
Yeah,
he's
going to run for president. That man's not kidding.
He's not kidding.
He didn't get the memo that we're not looking for another George Bush.
If he's not in Texas, he's in Iowa right now. It seems like every week I see a story about him like making a pit stop in Iowa.
Suspect. First of all, he was the least exciting candidate of the last election cycle.
Right.
So like, give it a rest, Rick Perry.
Right, exactly.
Second of all, he's a complete idiot a la George Bush. Yeah. So, like, no one's trying to listen to that.
Nope.
It's still not the right time to reinvent George Bush.
Nope. Mm-mm.
Third of all, he's the only person who's not, like, a literal wingnut in the extreme sense.
Yeah.
Who's on this list, oddly.
Yeah, I know,
like,
right?
Like, why is he on the list?
Like, once...
It makes me worried about who his supporters are. Because, like, once you're on a list where none of the sort of, like, legit Republican contenders... Of course, they're not going to go.
And the funny thing is Ben Carson didn't even
go.
And he still almost won the thing.
Rand Paul
and Ted Cruz was there. Rand Paul didn't go. Well, we've talked a lot about Rand Paul, like, trying to, like, speak some, you know, reason lately.
Right, yeah.
Which is sort of weird coming out of his face, but...
But
he didn't go, and then Chris, like, Christie didn't go, Jeb Bush didn't go, like, they're not trying to get
seen
down there.
None of the, like, legit contenders, if we can call any of them that,
yeah.
Were at this thing or were competing in this race.
Right.
This straw poll was exclusively crazy people.
Yes, yeah.
But, like, Rick Perry somehow snuck in there.
Right, and still only
got 5%. Only got
5%. Right, exactly. Oh, boy. Anyway, oh, God, in final news.
Yes.
And in best news.
The best news.
This is just, this has all the... all the things you want, basically.
Yeah.
So the United States Postal Service is starting to print Harvey Milk stamps,
sure.
Which is like,
yeah,
you know, slow clap for the USPS. Like,
right.
So
we're finally there.
But anyway, he deserves a stamp.
Yeah.
I mean, some suspect people have had stamps.
I have Harry Potter stamps by accident right now
that I didn't.
Like, I, for the next year, all of my mail is going to come with Harry Potter stamps because it takes me so long to go through a stamp book.
Yeah.
So, like, that's embarrassing.
Yeah.
Anyway,
but the AFA, the American Family Association, which is like...
a group of terrible people.
Only terrible people.
No one else would be in that association.
They're not happy with the USPS in the least.
I would
thankfully,
argue that they're
they have
probably not happy with the USPS in the
at
most.
Like, I'm sure they would prefer that it just be like private, you know.
I would guess that they're not people that are coming up with reasons to love the USPS when they're not releasing Harvey
Milk
stamps.
A federal, you know, it's a federal thing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But anyway, luckily they've concocted a plan to combat the Harvey Milk stamps.
This is going
to
work,
for their members.
Yes.
So the first thing that you can do, which seems like a thing, I mean, like, if you want to do this, if you want to be the guy who goes into the post office and declares that you do not want to buy a Harvey Milk stamp, then you can be that guy.
It's super easy to be that guy because you can literally just go buy other stamps.
You can buy other stamps. Like, if, you know, I would contend that you are an idiot if you want to do that because who cares who is on the stamp that you were sending a letter with.
But I currently, having Harry Potter on my stamps... feel like it maybe matters and that maybe it's okay to exercise some discretion when you're buying stamps.
Sure.
But if it's your prerogative to not want any stamps you don't want.
Right.
Sometimes I go and buy stamps and I'm just looking for those forever stamps with the bell on them or whatever.
The bell,
and they don't have, you know.
Well, that's the stamp that you want.
That's the stamp that you want. But if they don't, you know, they don't have it or they have some exciting colorful stamps, I'll sit and choose stamps. I'm not afraid to do that.
Yeah.
No one has ever compelled me to buy a stamp I didn't want, though.
No. Exactly. But the second part of their point two...
yeah.
And their two-point plan.
This is going to be a harder one.
It's only a two-point plan. This gets a little murky here, I think. Because point two is that they are telling all their members to send back all of the mail that they get that have Harvey Milk stamps on them.
I have a few questions about
this. Return to sender, send it back.
What mail are they expecting to get as members of the American Family Association with the Harvey Milk stamp? I would guess that me and you are going to get a lot of mail with this stamp.
Oh. I mean,
anything that comes from the city of West Hollywood will probably have this stamp, so all of our mail.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But I would guess that as a member of the American Family Association, I'm probably not associating much with organizations and other people that are going to be buying the Harvey Milk stamp. So something tells me it's not going to be a big deal.
I want the government to, like, send out, like, all of people's sort of, like, important tax documents.
Yes.
And sort of,
just
like...
just to these people.
You know, to these idiots.
Yeah.
Like, find out who they are, send their car registration information to them, their
tax
documents.
Let them return to sender all of,
like,
the things
I want them to get no important mail. Like,
yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. I want to only send them junk mail with other stamps.
Yeah.
A lot of penny savers, that would be fine.
Yep.
A lot of those other things that are like penny savers that don't seem to have a name and just are always in my mailbox.
But important documents.
Yeah.
Bills.
A lot of phone books.
Credit card bills.
Send them a lot of phone books with other stamps. But then take all their credit card bills and stick the Harvey Milk stamp on it.
That's it.
Yeah. Just, why not?
Mm-hmm.
That's how we as Americans can take a stand against this ridiculous plan.
God. Oh, man.
In any case, that's...
that was the news.
The news of
this
the week. We may have to do a bi-coastal one.
Oh, you're leaving.
I'm leaving.
I forgot. We haven't done a bi-coastal one in a long time.
So that seems like an adventure that we could partake in.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be Gay Pride next week.
I know.
Hopefully I'll be alive.
We might come to you late next week.
I mean, I was hardly alive for this one.
Right.
Oops.
Well, Brent finally made a friend with a pool, which is...
I did. I went to a pool party.
What you're trying to do in California.
Which, if you know me, you know that that was...
That's not... That was out of character.
It was very out of character. But, like, you have to... I was saying to Lila earlier today, like, why am I not going to pool parties?
No, why would you not do that?
What's wrong with me? I have a lot of pool party anxiety, but, like, who fucking cares?
It's a pool. Swimming pool.
Go to a pool.
Yeah, that's like, why am I living?
I live in Los Angeles, and there are many months of the year where you could be going to pool parties, and I just don't do it out of some sort of weird principle. And, like, screw that.
No.
I'm over that.
No. It's lame.
Lame.
So, in any case, we will see you next week from somewhere.
Yes.
And until then.
Bye.
Bye.